The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors. Good morning and welcome to another edition of Morning Drive here on WTBR. Bob Hack here with you on a Tuesday morning. And this is pre-recorded, so we're not going to do the weather and any all that stuff, but it's going to be another hot one today. It just seems like, you know, we go from crap to like summer and then back to like crap again. So hopefully this one stays and keeps going and we keep this weather for a while, especially as the high school playoffs are going in baseball, and the North Adams Steeple Cats are going to be starting up pretty soon. We got Tommy Nolan from the Steeple Cats here to talk about their upcoming season. What's up, Tommy?
Not much, Bob. Thanks for having me. Very excited with this warmer weather that it feels like baseball season again for a change. But yeah, we're geared up. We're ready to go, and just counting down the days till opening day.
It was actually funny. Yesterday, I was doing a music bingo event for the Mount Greylock baseball team, and we're like, when it's baseball games, the weather sucks, but when we need people to come out to an event, it's like the best day of the year, so it's crazy.
Baseball in the Northeast for you.
Yeah, no. So talk about, what do you do with the Steeple Cats? What's your gig there?
Yeah, so I'm the president and the chair of the board, so that's many different hats that I wear, but a lot of what I've been focusing my time on lately is just kind of rebuilding relationships that we've had in the past with different various sponsors. We're a 501c3 nonprofit, so right. Our existence solely depends on community support, people showing up in the fans, but also generous local businesses that, you know, donate funds or donate equipment that we can use to work on the field. But yeah, so we do a lot of that. My GMs and head coach, they've kind of taken responsibilities as far as player recruitment goes. So we've got another competitive roster filled and probably about 10 other names on a wait list. Mm-hmm. The roster tends to turn over throughout the season, you know, players on inning restrictions or only going to be spending a short stint with us throughout the summer months. But it's busy, a lot of talking to a lot of different people, but it's all been fun. It's been very positive. After last season, we made the playoffs, so just kind of continue on what we've been continuing on with and just try and put our best foot forward to have another successful season.
And, you know, there's sort of a hole in, you know, competitive baseball here in the Berkshires with Wacona Park, whatever's going on there. And, you know, so this is an opportunity to tell people here in Pittsfield, hey, there's still competitive baseball in a similar experience in probably a nicer stadium just up north. And, you know, how has it been trying to penetrate into the Pittsfield market where the Suns fans have been, you know, baseballless for the last couple of years?
Yeah, I mean, year over year, have been involved in the board for about 4 years now. Just took the rollover this past year. But, you know, attendance-wise, after COVID was down, mm-hmm. dwindled, dropped. Overall, this past year, we saw an uptick. I saw a lot of familiar faces. I live here in Pittsfield, so there's neighbors of mine that come to the games. But, yeah, you know, it's definitely something we're missing here in the Pittsfield market that we're trying to kind of highlight up in North County that, hey, we have a beautiful stadium, beautiful backdrop. We get a lot of competitive players. It's still a wood bat league, too. So we're just trying to call on our community members to show up. You know, you still can have that great baseball experience just 30 minutes further north.
And for folks that don't know, the NECBL is a very competitive league. I mean, lots of big names have come through there. Steven Strasburg pitched in the NECBL. You know, you get a lot of guys that come through, and it's really cool to see names pop up in the majors.
Yeah, we have one right now. He played with us years back, Zach Neto. He's a shortstop for the Angels, very competitive player. But, yeah, there's a lot of great names, and that's been our focus the past few years is, you know, we know we're not the Cape League. You know, we're a step down from that, but still very competitive league, and players compete to come play for us because it's great exposure for them to get seen by scouts and, you know, still compete throughout the summer months at that level, so that when they get back to their school in the fall, that they're that next step up on the roster. So,
and then you say it's a step down from the Cape League, but it's not a massive step down.
No.
It's you know, pretty reasonable. The FCBL that the Pittsfield Suns played in is a step down from the NECBL,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I would always get, you know, a little upset when the Suns would go on a roll and we have a great player, and then you guys would steal them up in North Adams.
yeah. So it's definitely very competitive, and yeah, it's not that far of a leap. I mean, we have players that are good enough to play at the Cape level,
mm-hmm.
And there's always some constant battle over, oh, they might get a contract from the Cape, so they're going to hold out on us because we have a clearinghouse that basically separates them, that hey, you can go and play for them, but you can't get poached from another league. So we have that in place to try and prevent that from happening. But overall, the players, they're all competitive, you know, and I wouldn't say that they're really that far of a gap there. So it's neat to watch these guys come over the summers and compete, and sometimes you see the same guys year over year and can see their progression.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I really like to see is, you know, hey, they came in first year, they might not be an everyday guy, but then maybe second year they come in and it's, wow, vast improvement, and they can make a really big difference on your roster.
When does the season start?
So it's starting up the first weekend in June.
Mm-hmm.
We actually are off the first night, which I believe is June 5th, and then we open it up on the road on the 6th, and then the home opener, I believe, is June 7th.
So, and, you know, there's games all the time. It's not like you're playing two or three times a week. I mean, it's basically 6-7 days.
Yeah, we jam-pack the season. Mm-hmm. You know, it's 22 home games, 22 road games, all in the span of 2 months. So it's from start of June to the end of July. Playoffs usually will start the first week in August, so... And part of that, too, is, like, your roster might not all be there on June, you know,
right,
start of June, because, you know, we're pulling in players from all across the U.S. on top programs, Major Five. So some of these guys are going to be competing in their College World Series or regional tournaments. And, you know, we've seen some guys have to stroll in there closer to July than, you know, start of June. But usually it's a good thing because they're coming hot fresh off of a World Series run, so they're,
yes,
they're riding a pretty big high and they're on a hot streak. So, you know, you hold out for those types of guys waiting. But
talk to me about what, like, the North Adams Steeplecats need from the community. Obviously, fan support, come on out. But, like, you're not putting these kids up at a hotel every night.
No. I mean, part of the league, the reason why we're successful is host families. You know, it's the backbone of our organizations, you know, families that are kind enough that maybe have a spare bedroom or even a bed at their house that they can throw a player into. That's one way to get involved, to get help us. But also, you create a relationship that lasts a lifetime. I mean, my GMs now, Dave and Nick Sacco, they've been hosting families since our inception, and they're still in contact with players that lived with them for years and years. And, you know, hey, they might even make it to the big league someday. We have people that go to see them play against the Red Sox, and
mm-hmm.
they'll leave tickets for them. So it's like, hey, you know, you gave me a bed back in, you know, 2008. We're going to be in town playing the Sox. Like, I left tickets for you, and they still get together. So host families is definitely a huge push for us. You know, we're always short on beds, and we're always looking for more community members to step up to, you know, take on a player for the summer, take on one or two if they can. And, you know, it's very helpful because these players are great. They're very professional. They can mentor these young kids. And, you know, so far it's been very positive feedback-wise from the last few experiences. Other ways to get involved is just volunteering down at the field, you know, whether it be helping out at the merch booth, coming out, helping out with the gates, or even in concessions. You know, we're always looking for more and more people to get involved. And then, you know, financially, any support that we can get, you know, our expenses are climbing. I mean, we all in the community see that
with
our grocery bill, our gas bill, everything is more expensive nowadays. And you know, we have a lot of expenses as a team, you know, busing these guys all across New England. It's not like the Cape League in that sense, where
right.
it's a shorter trip to and from. You know, we have teams up in New Hampshire, out on Martha's Vineyard, Connecticut, Maine. So we cover a lot of ground pretty quickly. But yeah, we're always looking for, you know, new sponsors to step up, you know, and we can obviously get them good marketing on the field. You know, we have about 18 to 20,000 people come to our games throughout the season. And there's such a huge push for broadcast now. We just invested in four cameras to broadcast our games on ESPN Plus. There's some on Huddle, some on NECBL Plus Network, and even Amazon. So we're trying to reach more and more people through the broadcast, but it gains you know, our local sponsors even more exposure too.
And it's great to be able to, and people get upset even like, when we started doing high school sports on TV, like ADs were a little upset. It's like, well, people aren't going to come to the game if it's on TV. And like, no, this brings you closer to the team because you get a better chance to follow them. And not only that, you know, we're broadcasting these games worldwide streaming, and that you're doing the same as well. So it's an opportunity for parents, grandparents, and others to watch. And it's a great opportunity to follow the team from afar. If you're on vacation, you can still kind of keep track of the team. I know I did that with the Suns, and my wife would get upset. I was like, why are you watching the Suns game? We're on the beach. She's like, because I want to watch the Suns game, you know?
100%. Yeah, there are many times. I mean, they spend on the road, and I don't get the opportunity to go on every road trip. But, you know, between all the different subscriptions that we have as a family, I was able to tune in to pretty much every game and, you know, keep tabs on the guys and how well they were doing against the competition. So, yeah, I mean, it could deter from, you know, attendance at the park, but we really haven't seen it. People still go to the park, not even just for the baseball experience, but, you know, we're trying to build it back to that family fun entertainment piece. You know, the on-field games, you know, the smiles of all the kids when they get their prizes from competing, and then chasing all the follow balls in the parking lot to get a free ice cream cone. It's those little things that really make me drawn to the park. And yeah, the broadcast only helps because it reaches those fans that aren't able to attend in person. And all our players, they're from all over the U.S.
Yeah.
So giving their families, friends, the opportunity to see them play at this high of a level, it's amazing to see.
And I guess my overall point was, if I have an opportunity to go to the game or watch the game on TV, I'm going to go to the game.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing replaces the game day experience. You would watch on TV as sort of a, well, I can't go to the game today, so I can still keep track of the team and still be involved. And, you know, and I always thought that was a silly thing anyways, because these NFL stadiums are banging out and MLB stadiums bang out, and, you know, a lot of these teams aren't hurting for attendance.
No. Yeah, I mean, after COVID, we kind of had to build it back up again. You know, things were a little tough. People weren't coming out, and, you know, we weren't doing all the things that we used to do. So that was part of me and the Sockos, you know, mantra kind of going into it is, all right, well, it wasn't broken. They had success years past, and that was just kind of build off of that and improve the process. And you know, we listened to a lot of our fans. We asked for feedback on, all right, what worked before and what didn't work. And now we kind of put our heads together and came up with a plan to try and push it.
Talking with Tommy Nolan from the North Adams Steeplecats. Talk to me about the game day experience at the ballpark. If somebody's like, what can somebody expect if they head to the ballpark to a Steeplecats game?
Oh, yeah. It's wonderful. I mean, right off the bat, you'll get out of the car. You'll hear the cracks of the bat. I love wood bat. You know, I'm not a big fan of the metal ping that you hear. So I just love that wood bat sound, that crack. So I mean, ballpark's great shape, great backdrop setting. You know, we've invested some money into the field over the years too, with different, you know, paint to beautify it again, and then on the field work too, edging, fertilizing, you know, fixing the warning track. But you'll still get those, you know, the hot dog smell. We got the popcorn going. And one of our novelty pieces is, you know, ice cream in a little novelty cap, and then the fried dough too. So we keep hearing feedback from a lot of the players on the other teams that our food is one of the best in the NHCBL. It's not like you're just getting a hamburger or hot dog. You know, we've tried to come up with some more options, you know, popcorn on top of the normal, you know, stadium digs there. We've got a great merch booth too with a lot of different items. We got some new stuff coming in this year honoring America's 250th anniversary. A few treats down up our sleeve for later on that I won't disclose too much information.
Certainly,
on.
Understandable.
But keep an eye out. You know, more and more will be coming out in these given months as the interns come in. You know, we employ a staff of interns for about like 15 to 20. That are all different backgrounds, you know, whether it be analytics, broadcasting, game day operations too, that'll assist with, you know, the on-field production. But, you know, the ballpark, it's been buzzing, you know, it's been nice to see that again. I grew up going to a lot of the games, so that's kind of my passion behind being involved is I was one of those little fans lining up on the fence there and, you know, asking my favorite players for their autographs and showing up every single night. And, you know, it's nice to see that again. We brought back a lot of different Little League, Cal Ripken youth groups to the field.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we can get them on the field with the players before the game or even do the national anthem with them. And, you know, as a kid, I loved that. Anytime I could go and be on the field with the players, I tried. I jumped at that. So it's been great to see the positive reaction from our community again, getting bought into baseball in the Berkshires. So, but yeah, the park's been buzzing. A lot of good things happening. A lot of fun to be had, and you know, you'll see a lot of smiling faces down at the ballpark.
And that's another great benefit at this level, too, is the player accessibility. You know, they're very humble at this point in their career. They're not driving the giant Hummers yet or anything like that. You know, and they're there for the kids. They understand what it's all about.
Yeah, 100%. You know, they know what we're all about, and they know how important the community is and how they need to kind of give back now. So we've been doing a lot with the local schools too. I mean, the timeline and the arrival of these players is always tough because
right.
It's right towards the tail end of the schools. But our board has done great, you know, contacting all the local schools, middle schools, elementary schools to try and get in there as soon as players can arrive. And we divvy it up. You know, certain players go here, have a kickball contest with the players. I think this year we have a coloring book that we're going to try and do. So, but, you know, it's good for them, humbling experience to, you know, have a little kid that's, you know, 5-6 years old that's looking up to them like they're the major league player already. And it's kind of teaching them ways to interact with the youth, too,
mm-hmm.
because eventually they're going to be there at that level. So it's good practice now.
Talk to me about the process of getting players here. You say you got them from all over the country. How does, and I don't know if you know much about how the recruiting process works. It seems like you're very hands-on, so you may, I know it's not your primary responsibility, but I'm sure you have some knowledge about it. Like, how does that work? You talking with coaches from these schools, or year over year, this coach is saying you should go here? How does that all work?
Yeah, I mean, because of how competitive the league is, it already kind of sells itself.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of interest just comes in naturally, and you kind of just weed through different applicants. That's some ways that we recruit players. A lot of what we do, too, is the relationships with those programs. So UPenn, for example, we've seen a lot of good talent come through from them over the last few years. And Nick Guascione is a Pittsfield native.
Yep.
So, you know, we signed him up. We got a few other good players along with him. And it's a relationship game. You know, you give their players a good experience playing for you over the summer. They're going to remember that and in turn continue to supply you with some top talented players. Mike Gladu is the head coach of MCLA baseball, but he's also the head coach of the Steeplecats. He has some baseball connections all across from his playing days and then just his networking as a coach at the D3 level. So he's brought in some gems too. But yeah, it's just a lot of different talking with different people about, you know, the league in a positive light. And then sometimes you even see where a certain roster on another team, they're fully 40-man rosters filled. Mm-hmm. They don't have any more room, but they do want this player to play in this league. And as a league, on the league level, they want competitive games. Like, you don't want to ever have, you know, blowouts or one team really good and the other team really bad. So we kind of work together as a league, you know,
okay,
to a certain extent. You know, obviously we're competing, we want to win, so we're going to keep the better players for ourselves and vice versa too. So you got to be careful sometimes, you know, maybe somebody's going to give you a player that you don't really want, but but yeah, it's just working through it, you know, getting back to people and, you know, making sure that you hear their concerns and, you know, try and call on them for when you need some top talented players. But we're definitely going into this year with a lot more arms. You know, this past year, I think we were a little light there and we didn't really get into trouble, but these guys play every single day. So it can be taxing on some of our pitchers. So going into it, I feel a lot more comfortable with 20 plus mm-hmm. arms ready to go. But you know, even this past week, we've had a few player injuries, so it's kind of shuffling and having that wait list ready to go, like next man up mentality. And, you know, there's spots to fill, and you fill them, and then, you know, hopefully they can all just compete at this level because it's they're very talented. So
we got a few minutes left. Talk to me about how when people come from all over the country to North Adams, like, what do they think about North Adams?
Oh, they love it. I mean, even Faye Vincent said, he was talking to John DeRosa back in the day about, you know, isn't this just beautiful? I remember the quote, and John responded like, what, the players on the field? And he's like, no, this backdrop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even spending some time up in the booth this past year, just realizing that, seeing the sun setting on the beautiful Berkshire Mountains, and hearing feedback from other teams in the league, they love coming to North Adams just because, I mean, we had some players last year that came up from Florida that really haven't seen mountains. So they were shocked. And, you know, it's a different area for a lot of these people, too, coming in. So they love it. You know, it's we live in a beautiful, beautiful place. And, you know, it's awesome to have them come here and experience it. And then they'll ask you, oh, where's your favorite place to eat? And then you're able to kind of recommend some of our local businesses and even local sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go and try it, and then they give you the feedback about it, and they loved it. So it's been really positive. It makes you feel good for where you live. And just showcasing that to a lot more people is what I'm here to do. Is I want to, you know, build this up and showcase everything that we can. And this is only a little blip, the Steeplecats, on the whole Berkshire footprint here. So
if somebody's interested in being a host family, first off, you know, people are listening in Pittsfield right now. Is that too far away or?
No, certainly not. I mean, you know, it's all within distance. You know, most of our guys are traveling here with cars. They some of them have to drive 20, 30 minutes commute when they're at their campus too. So 30 minutes, we try to keep them within that range. But, you know, at this point, we'll take host families from all over. So, no, I mean, we definitely would love more and more people to step up and, you know, create those memories that are going to last a lifetime.
And when's your first home game again as we wrap things up?
Yeah.
It's coming up on
So we are home first weekend of June. We are June 7th, Sunday, against the Sanford Mainers, who we played very tough last year in the playoffs. We ended up falling to them in game 3, but we've played them very competitively throughout the past few years. We're starting the season off with the defending champs, Keene, which they did really well last year. We had their number a few games. We always played them tough, so I'm looking forward to a little rivalry action again this year. So, but yeah, June 6th, we're on the road, and then June 7th will be the first home game. So be ready to pack the Joe.
And, you know, there's nothing like, you know, the sun going down, a hot dog in your hand, and maybe a beer in the other. You know, watching competitive baseball, there's nothing in the world like it. And excited to get some local baseball here in the Berkshires.
Yeah, no, most definitely. I love those things very much so myself. And yeah, I cannot wait till the season kicks off. It's going to be a very exciting one. And the only unfortunate thing is that it's over in the blink of an eye. You know, it's comes and goes.
It always seems that way, yeah.
Yeah, it's quickly here and then quickly over. But, you know, it's a full year commitment. You know, we're constantly planning as a board, and we've got a great board in place. So that all cares about the greater good and, you know, putting on a show for our community and, you know, utilizing these guys that are coming in town to play very competitive baseball. So,
and what's the website?
Steeplecats.org.
Steeplecats.org. So check out steeplecats.org to see the tickets and opportunities to see baseball at the Joe this year. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Appreciate it. And go Cats.
Go Cats. You know, we're not quite in hockey season. It doesn't feel like hockey weather. But about an hour away, the biggest the biggest playoff upsets are happening at the Thunderdome, and we got Ryan Smith on the other side of the break to talk about what the Springfield Thunderbirds are doing and how they just keep on winning games. That's on the other side of the break here on WTBR.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu.
And from Santrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Massachusetts. Retractable awnings, retractable screen, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms. Customized solutions available. Online at sandrini.com.
Pittsfield Community Television has relaunched our website at pittsfieldtv.org with a new design to make it easier to find our live streams with PCTV Select, where you can watch live sports, city meetings, and more. Now it's simple to find our past shows on demand and future TV schedules. You can also quickly find information on how to be a member, our upcoming training sessions, and how to donate to PCTV. Check it out at pittsfieldtv.org.
Do you need mental health or addiction services today? MassHealth clients in crisis now have access to same-day treatment at the Breen Center's new Community Behavioral Health Center and quicker access to urgent and routine mental health and addiction services. Please call 800-252-0227 for more information or visit our website at breencenter.org. Thank you.
Support for this public service announcement comes from Berkshire Community College and Park Square Productions.
Hi, it's Jen Glockner. I'm the director of the Office of Cultural Development for the wonderful city of Pittsfield, and I also host the Cultural Pittsfield radio show on WTBR. It airs every Friday at 8:30 in the morning. Stay tuned to learn all about the arts and culture scene for the city of Pittsfield and beyond. We hope you listen in every Friday at 8:30 on 89.7 FM WTBR.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org. And from UCP of Western Massachusetts, the Northern Berkshire Early Intervention Program is now accepting applications for an occupational therapist to support child development, empower families, and change futures. 2026 graduates welcome to apply. Apply today at ucpwma.org.
You have chosen wisely.
WTBR. And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Welcome back to Morning Drive here on a Tuesday morning, and I want to thank Tommy Nolan from the Steeplecats for joining us in the first half of the show. It's playoff season, and the biggest shockers are not happening in the NHL. They're not happening in the NBA, although maybe Cleveland was a bit of a shocker over the Pistons. But the biggest shocker in playoffs going on right now is in the AHL. It's happening right up the road in Springfield, and we have our friend Ryan Smith from the Springfield Thunderbirds joining us. Ryan, thanks so much for hopping on.
thanks for having me again, Bob. And it's interesting. It's a shock to a lot of people, but I think if you ask Steve Ott and the guys in the dressing room, this is not shocking to them. That's what has made this all the more enjoyable.
So the playoffs start, Springfield was basically the last team in, and they get smacked around in Charlotte 8-1, and you're just thinking, well, it was nice to make it. And what has happened since?
If I knew the answer to that question, I would have gladly tried to profit off of that a little bit. But I think the biggest reality to it all is that this team, ever since Steve Ott took over, they've found an inner belief in themselves. And you looked at it after game one in Charlotte. Yeah, it was ugly. 8-1. We saw it on social media comments, and we all felt the same way. And the team, to a man, the very next day had a practice offsite in Charlotte. And I remember being at that practice and thinking to myself, this is as upbeat and as loose of a team after losing an 8-1 game when you're on the brink of elimination, needing to win two on the road just to keep your season alive through to another round. But I remember being taken aback by how poised and calm and really loose everybody was. And I didn't put a whole lot of stock into it at the time, but it was pretty clear that from what happened at the end of game one on, Steve Ott and the group found something in their game, whether it was the solution to what went wrong in game number one, whether it was looking back on success they had down the stretch of the regular season and rediscovering that formula. And most of all, guys stepping up and stepping in when called upon. This is a team that through 9 games in the playoffs now, I believe, has had probably 7 or 8 different lineup combinations due to injuries and things of the like. So it's been a next man up mentality, and pretty much every next man up has been exceptional. And it begins, obviously, between the pipes. Georgi Romanov wasn't even dressed for game one against Charlotte. He comes into game two as that third goalie that Charlotte did not see in game one. And he goes on to not only take the net in that series, but turn in one of the all-time great Calder Cup playoff goaltending stories I've seen over my 10 years in this league. It's amazing how fast your fortunes as an athlete can change when you take advantage of one opportunity that gets presented to you. And I think Georgi Romanov is a good testament to that. And there's a guy who, I'm not sure a month or two ago, I'm not sure how active his phone would have been in the offseason with NHL clubs, AHL clubs asking for his services. And now I have a sneaking suspicion his agent is going to have to start marking down which teams are not interested, because he's putting the whole league on notice, and he's got a whole lot of NHL eyeballs on notice as well. And again, I think it all boils back down to that one word, belief, and adding to it, resilience. This team has now won, where are we at now, 6 playoff victories. And of those 6, 5 of them have been in a come-from-behind fashion of some kind. So it's remarkable what this team continues to be able to do when it looks like every factor, every hurdle in the world is in front of them. They keep finding ways to leap over them.
Yeah, and we'll get back into, you know, what happened in Charlotte and, of course, the Providence series, which was outstanding. But, like, their biggest win of the playoffs might have been Thursday night, their most recent game, in game two. They lost game one. They're not a team. Scranton Wilkes-Barre, probably not a great matchup for Springfield. So, like, you're happy to be here at this point. And then they lose game one, the Thunderbirds. And then in game two, they're down 3-0. And what happens from there? I mean,
it was the third period in overtime in Wilkes-Barre. It's kind of a microcosm of this entire postseason to this point. Get punched in the mouth multiple times. You're going up against the goaltender in Sergei Mureshov, who was, for my money, probably the second-best goaltender in this conference all season. Best rookie goaltender in the league, bar none. And they've gone 5 periods without scoring a goal on.
Mm-hmm.
So you look at it from that mindset of, yeah, they could put together a strong push in a third period, but how are you going to put 3 and then 4 behind a guy that you've put nothing behind over the first 5 periods? And again, it just keeps coming back to, when it looks like they should have no reason to have any belief to the random onlooker, they find another gear. They find another source of belief, inspiration, drive, jam. I don't know what the word is, but they have constantly dug into that well. And I think this is now three rounds in a row where a team on the other side, they see the T-Birds and how they played down the stretch. And you know that you're facing an opponent that is not the team that was 2-10, 2-1 right. in the first 15 games of the regular season. I think they understand that. But I think subliminally, you look and you see the fact that they're just a team that was 500 for the regular season. And after game one goes your way, which was the case for Charlotte and which was the case for Wilkes-Barre, you get yourself kind of caught up in that mindset of, oh, they're going to run out of juice. They're going to run out of gas. And this isn't going to be so difficult for us. And this is now three times that I think the T-Birds have snuck up on their opponents. And they have thrived on being overlooked. And frankly, for their sake, I hope Wilkes-Barre Scranton still kind of thinks that they're going to bounce right back come game three and game four. But this was a wake-up call, not just to the Penguins, but it was a wake-up call on notice to the rest of the AHL that what you're witnessing right now from this Springfield team, it can no longer be called a fluke.
Yeah, no, and it's interesting because you see in professional sports all the time, you know, the made-up nobody-believes-in-us story. I remember the Chiefs, after winning the Super Bowl, Kelce said, oh, nobody believed in us. Like, no, everybody believed in you. We just want you to lose because we're sick of you. But the T-Birds really do have a nobody-believes-in-us story.
Yeah, it's crazy to look at it and think that it is almost like that for this team. And I said to you at the beginning of this segment, it to anybody who's watching from the outside who just kind of keeps a passing glance at the AHL and prospects across the NHL system, you might not get the full story of the season, and you might think, "Wow, how is this happening? How is this happening? Is this like destiny? Is this a team pulling off a miracle?" And I'm telling you that Steve Ott and this team have never once at any point in all of this viewed this as we're the underdog or we're not supposed to be here or this would be a miracle if we get by. They have never once had that mentality. And the word that Steve Ott has regurgitated again and again and again to the point where he kind of laughs every time he brings it up now is that it's a process that he has put in place with this team from the very beginning stages. And anyone who's followed our social media has seen in his post-game remarks to the team following these playoff victories, there's some adjectives I can't use for right. for what he says. But he says, we're a good hockey team, guys. Like, this is not a case of we're getting lucky, we're getting hot. Now, do you have to have some elements of luck for things to go your way? Of course you do. But this is a case where they not only understand why they're winning, but they believe that they are the better team in each and every one of these matchups, giving up 38 points in the regular season to Providence, giving up, I believe, 29 points to Wilkes-Barre Scranton during the regular season in the standings. Everything becomes a fresh slate in the postseason. And this is a team that is good. It's a good reminder to everyone in the sports world that the regular season, while it can hold some bearing, a lot of times it doesn't when it all boils down to crunch time.
We're talking with Ryan Smith of the Springfield Thunderbirds, the play-by-play guy. You can catch him on Flow Sports. I've been watching the games, and Game 3 is tonight at the Thunderdome. So looking for tickets online. Definitely go to the game. I'm going Thursday night to Game 4. I was so excited that they won an OT in Game 2, so I could, you know, guaranteed to be going to a Game 4. But let's talk about, first off, They win game two in Charlotte, and then they go to overtime in game three and win that. And it seems to be they're trying to take years off of Thunderbirds fans' lives with all these OT games. And then they roll into Providence. Providence, were they the best team in AHL history?
Not AHL history, but for this season, they were, I believe, 5 points better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. They were 9 points better than anybody else in the East. And it was a team that, against most of the league, they were a freight train throughout the course of the regular season. I'm not so blind to realize that Providence was without two of their most important defensemen in that series, and that certainly played a factor. But I also look at it as saying that when Providence was at full strength during the regular season, Hebert still gave them everything they could handle every time they played them. They won 5 out of 12 meetings when nobody else in the entire AHL on the Bruins schedule won more than twice against them during the regular season. So I just had this inkling in my brain going into the postseason that if the T-Birds found a way to squeeze their way out of Charlotte, Providence, the last team the Bruins wanted to see coming at them was these T-Birds. And thankfully, our thought processes over here proved to be accurate in that regard. And it just, there's so many different things that go into it, but they had a formula. They had a method to what is a chaotic sport in general, but they were committed to wearing down that Bruin defense to the point where eventually they would not be able to withstand the heat any longer. And I think you saw it in games 3 and 4 of that series. It wasn't a highly potent series from a goal scoring perspective for the T-Birds, but they just wore them down, held up their fort on the defensive end of the ice. And when they got that one chance they needed in overtime in games 3 and 4, they got what they needed. And sometimes the tiniest of margins, the tiniest of bounces makes all the difference, especially in a shorter series like this one was.
And yeah, they win game 1 in Providence and you're like, okay. And then they lose game 2. And then game 3, they win in overtime. That was the Dubé goal. That was really one of the prettiest setups I've seen.
Yeah, it's funny. This T-Birds team, I've been joking with some of the players about this. They've now won 4 overtime games in this postseason, and 3 of them were of the greasy, strange bounce, weird goal, hard to identify how it went in or who put it in. Whereas the Dylan Dubé goal was the one that was absolutely picture-perfect, clean, masterpiece play off a rush, 3-on-2, perfectly executed with your two most veteran leaders on the forward side of things in the middle of it all, and two players who have kind of been through all the ups and downs that this team has faced throughout the course of the season. So it's been so cool to see really veterans, young players, guys who have bright, long, star-studded careers ahead of them, and guys who are so appreciative just to be cutting their teeth at the American Hockey League level. The fact that everybody, while playing for their own individual goals, has bought into coming together as a group of 20, 25, 30 men towards one bigger goal here that nobody in this league could have foreseen coming. And there's hoping that we're only halfway home.
And I didn't realize there were so many Providence Bruins fans until the whining and the complaining happened after the offsides in game 3. None of them had anything to say about the Bruins player that nearly took Neupower's head off. Nobody had anything to say about that, but they're all talking about the offsides.
And what I like to tell people if they ask me about it is, well, last I checked, before that overtime even happened, the Bruins had a 2-1 lead in that game.
Mm-hmm.
They had every right to hold that 2-1 lead. They didn't. Game was tied at 2 for about 35 minutes of regulation. You had 35 minutes to do something about that. Didn't do it. So, and over the course of a year, no one wants to hear it when it happens in the postseason. And I'm not going to go so far as to say that the T-Birds didn't get lucky, because absolutely they did.
Yes.
It was a miss, and it can't happen. And if the shoe was on the other foot, absolutely we'd be saying it can't happen. But you also can't excuse that when every team over the course of a year, you're going to get the rug pulled out from under you at some point. Officials, just like players, just like broadcasters, just like staff members and managers, they're all learning things on the fly, and they're going through hard learning lessons along the way themselves. So it's the nature of the beast. I think something good will come of it if this offside replay review system does go into effect next year, like it's being talked about. I think something good will come out of it, but I don't think it serves as an excuse, quote unquote. And I don't think it would have served as an excuse if the T-Birds lost that series 3-1
right.
either. So that's that's kind of the way I look at it, but you're never going to change diehard fans' opinions, and that's part of what makes us all great.
And it made me laugh because if that game was in Providence, and I've been watching on Flow Sports, Providence, that camera angle they have there, you would have known anybody was offside if it was that game was in Providence.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm at the end furthest from the spot on the ice here relative to there where that would have happened. So I would have had no way of knowing myself. So.
Yeah, and then they win game four in overtime, another overtime win to win the series. And that was the one where something funky happened in front of the net and, you know, everyone came off. We all celebrated. I was going bananas. And then the referees reviewed it.
Yeah, I'll be honest. I don't know what that one was about, but I just remember watching it and being like, this can't be happening again. And they're all running together in my brain right now. I honestly don't know if that was game three or game four, but I know that there have been quite a few situations where overtime goal, team doesn't quite leave yet, and you're wondering what are they waiting on now? What are they trying to find out now? I think we're both thinking of game two in Wilkes-Barre now, where puck hit the end boards, came out, hit the goalie, went in, and they gathered together again to have a conference about it. And the only thing I could think about is, did they think Wilkes-Barre Scranton had a possession touch in there somewhere on a delayed penalty? That was the
right, because
that came to my brain.
Because the arm went up when he was on the breakaway, and he didn't know what was going to happen. And then the goes off the end boards, and then it hit Thomas on the way back off of his backside and went in, or off the goalie's backside?
I think, I'm not sure whose it hit. They both were in like a similar spot. It hit one of them, obviously. And found its way in. I don't think if Akil Thomas had 100 reps at that same exact play, falling in motion, I'm not sure he could have put it off the end boards in a better spot one more time out of 100. So, again, you got to be good. You got to be lucky. And, boy, it's just making for one long chapter of what has been a very, very interesting drama-filled year.
And Thomas himself said he didn't know he won the game until he was in the celebration.
Yeah. he's laying there on his back behind the net, and my first thing is, oh goodness, I hope Akil's okay down there. They're not just piling on an injured player as all this is going on. But yeah, I can tell by his reaction that he might have been the most stunned guy in the building that it somehow found its way in. He's probably thinking to himself, am I about to have a penalty shot in overtime, or is my team about to go to a power play in overtime? Never thinking for a second that he was going to have 19 of his teammates standing right over his head in the span of about 10 seconds.
Talking with Ryan Smith from the Springfield Thunderbirds. Game three is tonight at the Thunderdome, all square at a game apiece with Scranton Wilkes-Barre, the Penguins affiliate against the Springfield Thunderbirds. Game three is tonight. Game four is happening on Thursday. So if you have the opportunity to head out there, the Thunderdome is an intense place during the regular season, but I imagine it's only way crazier in the playoffs. They were going bananas after game four. I love Romanoff's belly flop onto the ice after getting the first star. It's just been an awesome playoff run so far.
Yeah, the fun context to Georgie slip and slide is the fact that before the game began, when he came on the ice for pregame warmups, I didn't see when it happened, but evidently he caught a rut in the ice or caught something on the ice, and he actually fell skating toward his net to begin the warmup session. And so I was looking down at my papers or something, and I look up, and there I see Georgie's on his belly sliding right towards the end boards. And I'm thinking, Georgie, get yourself up. We don't need you going headfirst into the end wall right now. He picks himself up, smacks the end glass. The fans back there go crazy. And then he did it again at the end of the game. And I asked him after the game, was that something new that you pulled out to get the fans going, or was that an accident? And Georgie said, no, that was an accident. I just fell. it was a completely ad-libbed end game celebration. what a callback to remember something like that happened before the game. Some goaltenders would cower and hide and not want to show any proof that something like that happened. And he goes and has one of the best goaltending performances in this team's history and decides to do that and poke a little fun at himself. And it has taken on a life of its own since he did that, rivaled only by Joel Hofer's goalie goal. So I guess goaltenders making absurd plays or doing memorable things in the second home playoff game of a year is and goaltenders who wear number 30 while making a sensational play or sensational performance in a second home playoff game of the year. I guess that's just the trend we got to lock in on from here forward.
We talked about Georgie getting some NHL looks after his playoff run this year. Steve Ott, who has really done a remarkable job with the Springfield Thunderbirds. And it was, you know, some people would say it's a step back to leave an assistant position with an NHL team to take a head coaching position in the AHL. Does he get looks at some of these job openings? Does he get a look at Edmonton? I think he'd be a great fit for Edmonton. Toronto, you know, some of these openings throughout the league. Is he at the point where just after half a season of work and the incredible work he's done with this team, that he might get some NHL looks?
I'm the farthest thing from an NHL general manager. I am as unqualified as it gets to even pretend that I am in that role. But in my opinion, it is extreme malpractice to not interview Steve Ott right now with what he has shown at the American League level with a team that has an interesting balance of young prospects, first round picks for St. Louis, who are thought to be big pieces of what their team is going to look like the next 5, 10 plus years. And also working together with veteran players like a Chris Wagner, who's played 900 or so pro games, Dylan Dubé, who's been in the NHL for 4 or 5 years previously in his career, Callie Rosen, who's been a consummate pro for 12, 13 years, and every single guy in this dressing room, they play for their coach. And he elicits something out of his players that is hard to describe. And it is a hard line to walk when you're a head coach at the AHL level, because normally the stigma attached to it is you're either big on coaching up the prospects without caring about what the veteran players bring to your organization, or you're a veteran, or you teeter toward the veteran players and you're a little bit harder on the young guys, trying to make them earn their stripes. And he's found a way to kind of bridge the gap. And I've seen such a togetherness from this group since he took over here in mid to late January, that it would be, again, I just think it would be malpractice for these teams with head coaching openings not to entertain a conversation or an interview with him. I mean, you look and you knock off the top team in your league in a season and you do it in 4 games out of a 5-game series, that should open up eyeballs. And everyone, the tendency in the NHL, and I understand why, is you want someone who brings that experience. You want someone who's been through the rigors of a Stanley Cup playoff run and someone who kind of understands the day-to-day life of being in the National Hockey League as a head coach. But at the same time, look at these teams that turn themselves into powers by taking a chance on an up-and-coming coach. You think Tampa Bay regrets hiring John Cooper from when he was a lawyer and then a junior coach and an AHL coach and an ECHL coach? I think they're pretty happy with John Cooper. And I'm not suggesting that Steve Ott's going to become John Cooper tomorrow by any stretch of the imagination. There's obviously a lot of work that has to be done once you get to that level. But these guys are lurking out there, and there's going to be a time where there has to be a new wave of NHL coaches that are going to become the guys who are maybe getting a couple of opportunities in a couple of different markets over the course of their career. But it all starts with that first job you get. And I think the argument that it's a step back to be a head coach of the AHL versus an associate coach at the NHL level is completely ludicrous and unfounded, because as Steve Ott put it, if you are going to be entrusted with running an NHL bench, unless you're Rod Brind'Amour or Marty St. Louis and you have direct ties to the market that you are in, it's very rare you get that first crack
right
at the NHL level without a head coaching experience somewhere. And it's a completely different animal when you are the head coach. You are, I guess for lack of a better term, the bad cop. When you're an assistant coach or the coach who works with the defense or the coach who works with the forwards, you're almost like the good cop and you're the pat on the back guy, and the head coach is the whack on the rear end guy, for lack of a better analogy there. So I think all of these factors make Steve Ott someone who should absolutely be getting these looks, getting this attention. It's deservedly so. And we obviously hope we don't lose him, but at the same time, you root for people when you yes. are around truly great people in this game. And Steve Ott is the 100% genuine article. What you see is what you get with him. Everybody knows where they stand with him. And I think a lot of NHL players, coaches, executives have grown to like Steve Ott over the years because as a player and as a coach, he's the same guy in all situations. There's no two-face. There's no fakeness is not the word I'm looking for, but there's a genuine aspect to Steve Ott that I think a lot of people are noticing.
Springfield Thunderbirds taking on Scranton Wilkes-Barre in the second round of the playoffs. We got through the play-in. What is the technical? Is this the final of
Atlantic Division
final? Atlantic Division final. Okay.
We go first round, which is quote unquote the play-in, but yeah. It's not formally titled that. Atlantic Division semifinals, Atlantic Division finals, Eastern Conference Finals, Calder Cup Finals. So halfway home, if you will.
And game three is tonight at the Thunderdome, the MassMutual Center in Springfield. Game four coming up on Thursday. Springfield trying to continue shocking the world. They got home ice the rest of this series. So they're just going to win these two games tonight and Thursday. And boy, we are going to be rocking. I can't wait to go to Thursday's game. I'm in Section 16, so that's just a completely different experience right there. And I can't wait. I can't wait to get out there on Thursday, but you should get out there tonight if you can.
Yeah, I echo that 100%. If you haven't been able to see any of this in person, and even if you're pretty new to the game, I think hockey is one sport that translates so much better in person
oh yeah
than it does on a computer screen or on TV. There's so many little details that go into it that make it such a unique experience. And I hear from fans who are ticket holders of ours who began coming to games not understanding a blue line from a red line, and now they're diehards within a matter of months or a year or two. So I can't encourage it enough. And playoff hockey is it's a completely different experience, and the only way to describe it is to see it firsthand.
So you have the opportunity tonight, and then on Thursday, game three and four of the playoffs. And if Springfield wins both those games, they move on. And Ryan, thank you so much for joining us. I can't make it tonight, but I'm going to be checking you out on Flow Sports. So looking forward to your call, and we will talk to you soon. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks so much, Bob. Hope you're witnessing a clinch come Thursday.
I can't wait. Ryan Smith from the Springfield Thunderbirds. I want to thank Tommy Nolan from the North Adams Steeplecats, who joined us earlier in the broadcast. Check them out this summer as well. We'll be back tomorrow here on Morning Drive here on WTBR. Just get in my car.